I have a topic to bring up on the minutes. And first off, Michaela, thank you very much, but I think that they're too much. I mean, you're doing, it's a lot. Because all of our meetings are recorded, I feel like they can be condensed.
Okay.
So that you don't have to spend a number of hours. I mean, I think that that's how long. I feel like we can be very transparent and still have them. I think that some of the things we can take out. One, I believe like there's some personal comments in there that I feel like it's off course of the Planning Commission that we don't need to have those in there.
Perfect.
When it has nothing to do with what's being the topic at hand or it's gone off, I don't know that that's a subject that needs to be put in there. Like I said, it's all recorded. People can come in. I just feel like we can lower these or make these smaller and more condensed and still get the pertinent information out and not having you have to do it first. So if anybody has an issue with that, please let me know. That's my... I believe that we could get some of it more.
Well, that's super positive feedback. My training's always been to include as much detail, but if the audio is recorded and that's your preference, that makes life a lot easier for us.
Yes.
So thank you for that. Yeah. Give me 2 pages next one.
So our next agenda item is public hearing AZ 148-23 legislative code updates.
So I'll start, and I do have to say that Landon Jones, our new planning tech, has been super helpful. It gets all the credit for all the changes, but I'd just like to preface his presentation, if it's okay. So we included a cover memo that summarized the changes that we had proposed. Went into a little bit more detail on a few items. And if you recall our work session we had a preliminary discussion in September, we had a full-blown work session in October, and that was the time when you said, let's address data centers, let's address accessory dwelling units, and also let's address the retirement standards for solar farms. So we, based on our research and additional public input, if it's okay with you, Chair and Planning Commission, if Landon could go through his report, and we might need to go back and forth, so we have several items to adopt into the record tonight, but if you have questions as he's presenting, it makes sense to interrupt at that time. And just another word, this is a legislative matter, so your... action tonight will be a recommendation to the Board of Commissioners, who will have a hearing on January 17th in Erie again as part of their regular Planning Commission meeting. Before Landon starts, if I might just make sure the Planning Commission has received all of these letters. I think we have two Planning Commission members who are participating online. That's Commissioner Killian and Commissioner Stanley. I will make sure that I send those, I will email you both of those comments.
I gave Commissioner Anderson a packet that was Steven, so.
Okay, there's two, in addition to the 4 documents I sent this afternoon, there are 2 more. So if I note these, if we could enter these into the record, then that would be good. So the first item that was submitted after staff sent the packets out to add to the record was an email from Gabriella Goldfarb with Oregon Health Authority, and she had some comments on specific language for accessory dwelling units relative to drinking water standards. The next item... The next item was a letter from Wendy Kellington representing Bob Levy and Wendy River with some suggestions and opposition to allowing ADUs in the rural residential zone based on the LUBGWAMA and the nitrate status and also Goal 5. The next item, these are extra that I'm sending over to you. I don't know how I got all those extra. The next item staff shared today is the Article 4, and it includes a redline version that staff and AWS have been working through for the past couple of weeks. And our purpose for sharing that is to show that we have done significant outreach to the affected industry, and I believe we're on the same page with those changes, with two minor pieces, and Landon will explain those when he gets to that part. And I appreciate very much their involvement in that process. The next letter is a letter just received this afternoon from the Port of Morrow, who's asking us to not make any changes relative to data centers. I do want to note that we had set up a couple of meetings with the port, and they are so busy over there, they had to postpone, and so we haven't had a one-on-one with them, but they have been notified a couple of times, and certainly anytime they want to understand the process or substance, we're more than happy to meet with them. And then just this evening, we have a letter from Jake Madison of Madison Ranches, again opposing the accessory dwelling units based on the high nitrate and encouraging the county to hold off allowing additional accessory dwelling units on those existing parcels. And then the final is a letter from Northeast Oregon Water Association, and J.R. Cook is the executive director, with similar concerns about the carrying capacity of both the water quality and the water quantity, and what allowing a second dwelling on existing rural residential properties, the negative effect that could have. So there's items, there's several of them here. It would be helpful, Chair, to have a motion to enter these into the record.
Do we have a motion to enter the six documents we received after the packet was completed and distributed?
I move that we enter them into the
record. Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion's been made. Seconded. Everyone in agreement? Say aye.
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 Disapprove?
Aye.
Thanks. Okay. Motion carries.
Lastly, before Landon starts going through the process, and he probably doesn't talk as much as me, I just wanted to draw to the Planning Commission's attention the map that was attached to the memo that shows both the critical groundwater area and the LUBGWAMA, the water quality limited area, and I think Stephen's pulling that up. And then also a map that shows the service territory of Umatilla Electric Co-op. So the north end of the county is served either by Umatilla Electric, which is blue, and if you don't see blue there, then it's Pacific Power. And a little bit farther south, then it becomes Columbia Basin. And that might become relevant when we are talking about the checklist that we designed with AWS for siting data centers. So again, Landon and I kind of rehearsed this today to make it as smooth as possible, but it's a little bit clunky. The changes are based on the order that they're seen in the code, but there's some back and forth. So if it makes sense for Planning Commission to interrupt Landon or me, please do. And then I know we have some guests here who want to talk about specific issues as well. Is that me?
Yep.
Should we go? Okay.
All right. So included, you'll have the legislative code update summary. Very similar to last meeting, there's only a couple changes to that related to Article 9 and then addition of site plan review for data centers in Article 4. And then moving on, we have the checklist for data centers. So this is something that we've been working with AWS in conjunction just to get overall more information on the required material for data centers to make it a more streamlined process for them as well as us over in planning. And these are the outcomes of that. So this is what we put together with the help of AWS.
And the checklist would not be something you would adopt, but because it's an internal and external tool that we will use, we thought it would be helpful for you to see what that looks like. So that's really taking the code language that we currently have and adding it to a checklist. And it won't change even if these code amendments are made. The code amendments really just clarify the process. And we have our county council, our land use attorney, Dan Kearns, on the line, and Amazon also has their land use council who can speak to that if you like later.
All right. Following that, we start in Article 1 in the definitions. First, you'll see on page 20, accessory dwelling unit.
Can you stop a second?
Recording in progress.
Just went away. Sorry to interrupt. Okay. Zoom went away for a second, and we're back.
Yeah. Accessory dwelling unit on page 20. There's been no changes made to this definition since the last meeting.
And just to note that that's the identical language that was in Senate Bill 644. Do you, are you looking for a paper copy of the packet?
Yes.
I don't know that we have any more.
Yeah, there's one.
Is there?
Oh. There's two more already.
Oh, excellent. So Landon is on page. He was on page 20. Any questions about that, the definition of accessory dwelling unit? Again, we borrowed that identically from the Senate Bill 644.
On page 22, you'll find the definition for average electric generating capacity, pulled from House Bill 2109. There's been no changes made to that definition since our last meeting. Page 23, we have commercial truck. Also no changes since our last meeting.
And when Landon, for those of you who weren't at the last meeting, we had a work session on definitions. So this is the second time Planning Commission is seeing this, and so Landon is bringing to the attention to the Planning Commission where between the last meeting and when this packet went out, we made some changes.
Page 24, energy generation area, pulled straight from House Bill 2109. No changes since the last meeting. Page 33, we have renewable energy facilities, also pulled from House Bill 2109, and no changes made since the last meeting as well. The last definition is usable floor area on page 35 from Senate Bill 644. No changes made since the last meeting on that as well. And those are going to conclude Article 1, all the definitions. Now we're moving into Article 3, all the zoning. And we start in Section 3.010, exclusive farm use. On page 39, we have the addition of confined animal feeding operations as an outright use subject to standards according to Senate Bill 85.
And remember that Senate bill said a county may impose setbacks if a CAFO is proposed to be located adjacent to a residential area. And again, no changes from your work session.
And the following page has the standards for the CAFOs. Also no changes. On page 41 are the retirement standards for power generation facilities. This is all encompassing for all power generation facilities, not just solar or wind or geothermal or natural gas. So,
And that was a follow-up. A few of the commission members had asked if we have a retirement standard for solar, and we don't. We don't have a local retirement standard in our code for any of those. And rather than creating a retirement standard that was exclusive for solar facilities, we added it to the, so it would be applicable to all power generation facilities. I think in some of the local permitted conditional use permits that counties approved over the past 10 or 15 years, there has been some sort of retirement standard included, or a condition rather, and this ties it to a standard, and we borrowed that from a few other counties. And that retirement standard would apply to any renewable facility. For those larger projects, you recall, that are permitted by the State Energy Facility Siting Council, they have a much more robust retirement standard. Ours is sort of a simple version of that.
And that's all new language since our last meeting.
Yeah, that's right.
Pages 43 through 47 have all of the updated siting standards for solar facilities, all the acreage. So on page 44, you'll see the first acreage change of high-value farmland to 240 acres, according to House Bill 3179.
And it was previously 160.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then the following page, another instance of 240 acres of high-value farmland, followed by 2,560 acres of arable lands. The next page, another 240 acres of high-value farmland, followed by 3,840 acres of non-arable lands. Next page, another instance of 240 acres of high-value farmland, followed by 2,560 acres of arable soil.
Before we move on to the next topic, what those standards, it increases again the threshold that the county can permit. So it means we can permit a bigger facility than prior to that legislation, those facilities would have gone to the state. Energy Facility Siting Council.
On page 48, you'll see the update of land division language and standards according to House Bill or Senate Bill 408. And that has not changed since the prior work session. And that's it for the EFU. Mm-hmm. Next page is Section 3.020 forest use. On page 50, we'll have updated language related to replacement dwellings to match that of the language in the EFU zone to encompass dwellings that were there but aren't there anymore.
A note from your planning director, that's been a really positive thing for folks who have property that's been in the family for a long time or acquired property where once upon a time Uncle Henry had a cabin, for example. If there's any proof that a cabin had existed at some point in time, you can you'd qualify for a replacement dwelling. So we've had a few happy landowners with that language. We just are codifying it here. Yep. So again, as Landon said, it's identical to the farm zone. So the farm and forest zones are identical in that regard.
And that language hasn't changed since our prior meeting. Mm-hmm. Page 51, we have section 3.040, rural residential. And on page 52, we have the addition of accessory dwelling unit as a conditional use in this zone. And that has not changed since the last meeting.
And we'll get to the specific standards for the accessory dwelling units when we get to section 6.
Yep. On page 53, we have the addition of limitations on commercial truck uses in the rural residential zone. This language is almost exactly the same as the last meeting. I just had to fix a copy and paste error that I made throughout all of the residential zones.
And again, for those folks who might be tuning into this discussion for the first time, this is only clarifying what we've interpreted for a long time, that commercial trucks are not allowed in the residential zone. So we have four of them, and Landon's included that language in each of those. Except where it says the landowner may be allowed to use a tractor unit as their personal vehicle. So it might be that a person has a 10-wheeler and no VW, right? So that's their way to get to the supermarket, and that's their transportation. So one per rural residential property. So we heard pretty loud and clear from the Planning Commission, we need to enforce that code, but we don't want to create an undue hardship. So that's why that language is written that way.
We'll continue on page 55, section 3.041, farm residential. And these will be the same changes as rural residential. So we'll have the addition of accessory dwelling unit on page 56, followed by the limitations on commercial trucks on page 57. And then moving on to section 3.042, rural residential 10, and page 58. Same changes as well, addition of accessory dwelling unit as a conditional use, followed by limitations on commercial trucks on the next page.
Oh, hold on a second, Landon.
We're connected again.
Recording in progress.
Oh. Okay, we're back.
Okay.
page 60, we have section 3.050, suburban residential zone. Again, the same change. Page 61, addition of accessory dwelling unit as a conditional use, followed by the limitations of commercial trucks in that zone on page 62. Page 63, we have section 3.051, suburban residential. On that same page, we have the addition of accessory dwelling unit as a conditional use permit, followed by the commercial truck limitations on the following page. Now is where we get a little bit confusing. I have the three industrial zones that data centers are allowed in, and I have it organized. We have two options for you, the land use decision and then the conditional use for data centers. And it's organized all of the land use decisions first and then conditional use second. So we'll have general industrial, port industrial, airport light industrial, all back to back showing data centers as a land use decision. And then we'll have general industrial, port industrial, airport light industrial showing data centers as the conditional use, just to help clarify, because it's a little confusing. So on the top of page 65, section 3.070, general industrial, there's a couple housekeeping changes that we made. Site development review was changed to site plan review with the corrective section number following it. And then on the next page, you will see data centers subject to section 4.166 of this ordinance showing data centers as a land use decision and outright use with standards.
And we'll suss out the details of what that means in a minute. So.
On the next page, we have section 3.073, port industrial. The same housekeeping changes made to section A of port industrial. And then the following page, data centers as a outright use subject to standards. Next page, you'll have section 3.076, airport light industrial. And on that same page, you'll have data centers as an outright use subject to standards. that was all the language for those three zones having data centers as an outright use subject to standards for a land use decision. And now we'll have the repeat of these zones, but a data center as a conditional use. So on that next page, you'll see section 3.070, general industrial zone. The same housekeeping changes made at the top of that section. And then the next page, you'll see data centers as a conditional use subject to general conditions. Next page is section 3.073, port industrial. The housekeeping changes at the top. And the following page, data centers as a conditional use subject to general conditions. Followed by section 3.076, airport light industrial zone, with data centers as a conditional use subject to general conditions. On page 75, we have the start of Article 4, supplementary provisions. In pages 76 and 77 has the addition of manufactured home standards correlating to current tax regulations within the county. So that's another housekeeping change that we made, and it was presented in the prior work meeting. On the next page, 78, you will see administrative highlighted. That used to say ministerial, and we changed it to administrative to be consistent with our code and how the processes are worked in the office, giving notice to public and landowners.
So just for clarification for newbies or anybody listening, a ministerial decision means it's like a desk decision. You come in, you issue your permit. It's a zoning permit, no public notice, no findings written. So the site plan review has administrative review requirements because by nature it's subjective and it's discretionary. I don't think that's the right spot.
It is. It falls again.
Okay.
And then pages 80 through 82 is the completely new edition of site plan review for data centers that we've made in conjunction with AWS. It encompasses all of the initial site plan reviews in the prior section, right before this, section 4.165, with additional clarification of other information that we need from them. And this language would only be added if data centers were chosen to be a land use decision. That's correct?
That's right. So the standards in this section, 4.166, the site plan review for data centers, this is the language that we worked out in conjunction with AWS. This is the process we actually follow now. So again, we're required to do a traffic analysis based on the threshold in our traffic, our transportation system plan and the correlating standards, which is 400 trips per day. So if a development has 400 trips per day or more, they're required to submit a traffic impact analysis. And that analysis would evaluate what impacts to a road or an intersection or another transportation mode. It could be a rail or airport, I suppose, but I'm only familiar with the roads. And then what mitigation is required, if any. The nature of that is very subjective. That's not something staff can say, yeah, we agree with you, move on. We have to write findings, provide notice to adjoining property owners and agencies, and an opportunity for comment, and an opportunity to request a public hearing. And it might be helpful for Dan Kearns to explain, either now or in a minute, Dan, after Landon talks about conditional use, the requirement for public notice for discretionary decisions. Yeah, I think, Dan, you're correct. I think in 4.166 that it should say site plan review. Our current language says it's a non-discretionary, but on 4.166 it should say it is a discretionary decision and is subject to administrative review. Do you want to talk about that a little bit, Dan?
Sure.
I think we transposed the words there.
Tamara and I have, she touched base with me some time ago, like 2 years ago, about the structure of permitting in the county. And under state law, if there's any element of discretion, then it requires a statutory land use process of some sort that involves notice. It could be what we call a type two, which is notice and an opportunity for nearby property owners to comment. And then it would be a director's decision that would be final unless appealed. So that's the minimum land use process that state law requires for decisions that have discretion or any element of subjectivity. And as I see these, especially in the context of data centers, they've always had an element of discretion or subjectivity when it comes to fashioning conditions of approval related to traffic impacts. If there are no employees, no trips there, then that's not that big a deal. It can easily be dealt with as having no impacts. But if there is discretion, if there is a traffic impact associated with it, then what is the traffic mitigation required that would be necessary to address that impact? What's the trigger for doing that mitigation? So for a lot of these projects, they are phased out over many years, many clusters of buildings, and at some point in that process, in the year whatever, several years down the road, it triggers the need for mitigation according to the county standards, according to ODOT standards. And so these decisions, if these things are permitted up front and they play out over many years, many phases, the upfront process has to provide for what's the trigger for mitigation being constructed, and what's that mitigation going to be? So what we've been dealing with and working with AWS on Gar Swanson, for example, and that's just, that won't be subject to these new this new code language, but what we have to project out in time, traffic generation over a series of five buildings, for example, and at what point will it trigger the need for mitigation, and what will that mitigation be? So you can see this is kind of a subjective type evaluation. It's not massively subjective, and it's very narrow. And so that's the process that we've been following. And this is intended to codify that process. So it's not adding to it, but it's just making it clear so everyone coming in the door understands that. And we've been working quite a bit with AWS on these projects that are in the pipeline, as well as this language. So does that make sense?
Dan, can I ask you a question? Chair,
yes.
I'm sorry. Okay. I think we transposed, so on page 78, I think the original 4.166 site plan review, the non-discretionary is ministerial. Then the difference is on the new 4.166, the site plan review for data centers, it is discretionary and it is administrative.
Okay, right. If there's any discretion, and in this case, it wouldn't be a massive amount of discretion. It requires at least the minimum type two land use process that's dictated by state law.
Okay. So back on page 78, it should say ministerial, not administrative, which is consistent with the comments that AWS had had changed. So because of that traffic analysis piece for data centers, it has to be administrative. So clear as mud, hopefully. Oh, thank you for that.
So do I understand correctly? So this on page 78, that's the standard site plan is section 4.165.
Yes.
And that should be ministerial, which means no discretion, no subjectivity?
Yes. Because it's really just a basic site plan review that we do for every zoning permit.
And okay.
Unless there was something like a traffic study for something that's used outright, then it would bump into the administrative process.
Right, so it should be these kind of clear and objective standards, so number of parking spaces, how much square footage for landscaping, you know, height of buildings. They should be quantified numeric standards. So that's what we mean by clear and objective. And even under state law, a site plan is considered a limited land use decision, which reflects by nature its limited amount of discretion. This looks like site plan light, which has really no discretion, which makes sense at the kind of more the site plan process for data centers has a bit more, as I just described about traffic in particular. Is that right then?
That makes sense to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then on page 80, where section 4.166, where site plan review should be discretionary. Rather than non-discretionary?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. That fits my kind of view of the land use world.
Okay, thank you. And again, the we're not adding standards, we're not adding a process. It's just that our code is abundantly clear that for a data center, this is the process and these are the standards. And we also have that companion checklist.
Right, and I got to tell you, I haven't seen anything like this in any other code around the state, because you have data centers, and it's such a unique creature, and it could be a totally non-discretionary thing, except it has this traffic impact issue that spans out over potentially several years.
I don't have further questions.
Moving forward, on page 83, we have the beginning of Article 6. At the top of that page, you'll see a housekeeping update to reference Article 9, Administrative Provisions.
And that matches the implementation of Article 9 that was adopted a couple of years ago. That means a lot of the decisions that are made, conditional use permits, land partitions, the basic things are processed administrative, findings, a notice. The Planning Commission is reserved for the more complicated ones or legislative actions.
On page 85, we have the conditional use standards for accessory dwelling units. I have made updates to that per the Planning Commission's suggestion in the October work meeting. Really, those changes were only to number 3, just clarifying drinking water standards.
Mm-hmm. And if I may, Oregon Health Authority, in their letter that you saw this afternoon or tonight, they're recommending some alternative language there. So originally it said a proposed lot or parcel must not lie within a critical groundwater or lower Umatilla Basin groundwater management area. And so Landon has the new language, which says unless the landowner can prove adequate water supply and adequate water quality meets federal and state drinking water standards. And what Oregon Health Authority, the language that they proposed is that we test for nitrate, arsenic, E. coli, And that they prove that the well meets or exceeds those federal and state drinking water standards. So that's even a little bit more specific here. But you also have testimony, and I think you'll hear from the public, both on Zoom and in the audience, that maybe we shouldn't have accessory dwelling units at all. So just reserve that in your mind when you start hearing from the public. So there's really two ways to handle it. We were recommending as a conditional use because it's a new thing, and I do think that there could be serious impacts both individually and cumulatively. But after considering the testimony, you may say, let's just pause and not allow ADUs at this point in time. So if you want to, here's some language to at least get started with.
Following page, on page 86, we have Article 7. And on page 87, we have a housekeeping update of MCC 1-99, which was adopted in 1999, mm-hmm. but just codified in this update. And that was in the previous Planning Commission work session.
And again, housekeeping, it's been adopted. It wasn't ever codified. We don't know why, but I don't know who was the planner there in 1999, so probably missed that one. It was me, for full disclosure. But we do allow RVs, people to live in an RV if they're building their own home or want to be there while it's under construction for 6 months, and then it can be extended. So putting it in the code language makes it, again, transparent and clear.
Yep, and following that on page 87 to 88, we have the addition of a temporary use for an RV in the case that the dwelling on the parcel is destroyed in a natural disaster. And that's according to House Bill 2809.
The legislature adopted a lot of language for temporary housing after we had the Labor Day fires. Yeah.
Article 9 starts on page 89, and there is one change in there on page 92. This is proposed language from AWS about the discretion of referring a permit to the Planning Commission. So we were hoping that we could get some suggestions from you guys, especially on this part, on how to approach that language change.
Can we go back to page 91 for a minute?
Yeah.
So the Oregon page 91, it's on the upper right-hand corner of your packet.
Yeah.
The U.S. Navy took time, Captain Hanks from the commanding officer of Whidbey Island Naval Air Station. They are on our notice list, so he and the liaison officer wrote a very thoughtful letter, and they do want to make sure that they continue to be part of our formal notification process. Staff didn't include any specific language that addressed that. We do as a matter of practice. And on page 91, under section 9.046, administrative review, big C, little b, it reads, notice for decisions shall also be provided to any identified affected agencies of the proposal per Oregon law, ORS 197-180. So I know the Oregon military is here because a lot of developments, new kind of developments, I mean, 20 years ago, who thought of windmills, you know? I mean, they had a few in Europe. So those sort of things really do affect military installations. We don't have a separate notice requirement for military, but they fall under that general category of public agencies, and we do provide notice for them. So every time Michaela sets up one of these folders for us, we have a checklist of all agencies that are notified. So hopefully that is satisfactory for both the Navy and the Oregon military. Sorry, now we can go back to page 92. And you already said, you already shared that?
Yeah, but this is a piece that we were hoping to get some
more feedback on.
Yeah, some feedback on.
And actually that's the very end of it, mm-hmm. of Landon's presentation. The code language in page 92, it previously read, within the planning director's sole discretion or at the applicant's request, the director may refer any application to the planning commission. And I think that's important, and I think Dan will probably have some ideas about that as well.